Hello, everyone. It's time to eat, drink, and be merry with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's Eat, Drink, and Be Merry show. We're very excited today. We are going to talk about Alaskan fish, but we're talking about wild fish, and we're going up, I think actually we're going to Washington to talk about Alaska, but first we're going to stop over in Arizona. We've got Diva Linda Kassam, the food, wine, and shopping diva here, and we also have Sina Wheeler, and Sina and her family run Sina C. Is it SinaC.com? Is that the website for everyone?
That's right. Yes, Sina C.
Sina C, but you're based in Washington State, right?
That's right. We actually live in Washington. I grew up in Washington, three generations of Alaska fishermen from Washington. It's actually out of Seattle, not entirely uncommon to live in Washington and fish in Alaska.
Okay. And Diva Linda, I know you spend summers and you know Washington, you lived in Washington, you go there every summer. This last summer, you know, you and Alan, Alan said, we're going fishing in Alaska and we're going to be on our boat for 3 months. And I encourage everyone to go to nationalparktraveling.com and read Diva Linda's article about her personal boating experience through Alaska, 3 months of it, and then learning to fish. And when we learned about Sina's, seafood and fish, I'm like, we got to get the diva on the line here. And I know you cook and, you know, Nancy and I are both allergic to fish. Otherwise we'd be sampling too, but Diva Linda, so you know all about this Seattle, Alaska fishing seafood fun.
Yeah. I think for most people who own boats and keep their boats in Washington State somewhere, the last couple of years have been in Seattle in the Magnolia area. We've been also up in Anacortes because it's easier to get to the San Juans and stuff. But for the number of years that we've owned the boat, the last 2 or 3 years have been focused more on fishing. I think that's just a progression. It's sort of like wine. You start out with the easy stuff and then you sort of get to the harder stuff because fishing is not easy. And if you think you're just going to go and pop some fish out in a day, that doesn't exactly work. And this year, so we've fished actually, I don't fish, my husband does, I get to troll the boat a little bit.
You're trolling,
you have to troll.
Diva Linda went trolling?
I went trolling, yes, it's extremely boring, if you want to know the truth. But anyway, and then if you go too fast, they lose the this and that. If you go too slow, some kind of sinker or something, it's on something. It's a whole deal. Let me tell you, it's not, you just don't put your fish hook in the water. That's not the way it works. So anyway, we've done the San Juans, we've done Canada, and this year the big dream of most men who own boats and women who own boats is to go to Alaska. For us, it was a 12-day trip to get there. And then it was 2.5, almost 3 months of being there, with the focus on fishing.
Wow.
So this, you understand now you got Alaskan fish to your door in Arizona, frozen. And you're talking about how fresh it was, even it's frozen, but this fish was quality. You've got a great story you wrote about it. And we've also got one of your recipes, Sina, up with the article up on blendradioandtv.com. Everyone, just type in Sina, S-E-N-A-C, S-E-A, and you'll find it. So you understand what goes into what Sina's family do. And so we understand there's a lot of work to it, but Sina, I want to bring you in on your background of your family, because you're of Norwegian descent, right? Your family coming in, and tell us a little bit of the fishing history and that connection from Washington to Alaska.
Yeah. For me, it's interesting because it's my family with the fishing heritage. And my husband is the son-in-law, and so is my dad. So I guess we'll go back a couple generations. My grandfather, Lars Jangard, immigrated from Norway. He and his brothers immigrated at different times, and what they did, they fished. So they would get a boat, a longline boat, start working the boat. And when another brother was coming over, they would get him a boat too. So that was just how they did it. And they arrived in Ballard, Washington, which Ballard right out of Seattle is a very, is a place where there's a lot of Norwegian immigrants. So they felt really comfortable, and it's right by the locks and where you fish. So most of those boats fished from, definitely fished Alaska. Some of them have permits for off the coast. And then way back in the day, my grandfather, my dad has looked at the log. He fished all the way from Alaska down to Mexico. He fished a lot. Wow. And that's what they did. And then a part of that is, of course, having your kids or your sons and your family members moving into it. So my grandfather had a boat, the Cape Flattery, and when my mom married my dad, he kind of got brought into it, and he was working on the boat as well. And then it turned out it was time for succession, and my mom's little brother moved up towards that boat, and then they moved my dad onto another brother's boat. So it gets a little bit convoluted, but it's just the way fishing was done, and frankly still is done to a lot of extent. And so my dad was brought in as the son-in-law, taught to fish, moved over onto my great uncle's boat. And on that boat, they were mostly halibut. And at the time, this was in the mid 80s. This is moving to the black cod, I guess, but they were fishing mostly halibut. My dad says, he's the young guy on the boat, and he says, "Hey, you know, I hear these other guys are fishing for black cod, also known as sablefish. And I hear it's going really well. And, you know, could we give it a shot?" And Uncle Otto, he says, "Well, you can, but not me." And so that's how my dad kind of moved into the captain's seat, is fishing for black cod. So that's one reason black cod is really kind of special to us. We've eaten a lot growing up. It's really the fish that gave my dad the start. Once you move into the captain's seat, then Uncle Otto just said, "Great." He really wanted to retire, and he didn't have any kids, any sons. And so that's how that worked. And then ironically, or maybe not, it really was similar how my husband got involved. He started fishing. He got a chance on my dad's boat, 20 years later, right around the time that we got married. He moved, got started on the boat, and then quickly thereafter my dad retired and he kept fishing that boat, and now he fishes for salmon as well. So there's long lining on a bigger boat, halibut, black cod, those are out deep, and then he also has a smaller salmon boat, and that's done more towards the mouth of the river. So all of it in Alaska.
So it's that you've got the intercoastal area as well as the ocean, right for the fish. Okay, yeah. So and that is that two different kinds of fishing?
Two different types of fishing and two different types of boats. I will try not to go too, I could talk about fishing a lot. I could go on my dad's boat, the longliner. So halibut and black cod are caught with longline, and longlining is done usually on a little bit of a bigger boat. So there might be a crew of five guys about. And it has hydraulics. The line is goes down miles down deep off in the Gulf of Alaska to the very bottom. And then it's called long line because it sits along the bottom, and every about 3 feet is a hook with some bait. And so they catch the really deep fish that way, halibut and black cod. And it's actually it's really interesting how well they can target. They can target the halibut versus the black cod by the depth. And they're looking for underground, they're looking for features of the ocean floor. They kind of know that they like to hang out on a shelf right before it gets really deep, something like that. So they're actually looking at, with radar, the bottom of the ocean floor, and they're looking for these spots that they hang out, and then they target with the type of bait. So it's really interesting, the same fishing method. They will catch halibut on a halibut trip, black cod on a black cod trip, and it's really just knowing where they hang out and maybe changing the bait.
Wow. So Diva Linda, did you guys have radar?
Yes, we did, as a matter of fact. And the boat was the original owner had it delivered, and it was a fishing boat in Alaska. So it's an Ocean Alexander, and it's sort of modified for fishing. I think it's had a couple maybe one or two other owners, and then us, and each one sort of modified it. But yeah, we had radar, and it's quite fun. The radar we have show when the fish come. If you're good at it, you'll understand the depth of what they are, where they're at and all that. After a while, you get to understand that. But, you know, there's a lot of hooting and hollering when the fish come on the radar because they look like little fish. I don't know, whatever this program is, little fish. And then there's schools of fish. And then there's unidentifiable things that maybe are fish, but maybe not. And
I want the anodyne.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, oh my God, don't put anything down there. That's something else or whatever. But, you know, it's, yeah, so we do have radar, and that helps us a little bit. But it's a true learning experience, science, something that, as she says, takes generations to understand. It really does. And this deep water shelf thing, and it's very interesting to watch. You go to small, very small fishing villages, and some of these guys just go out in a regular tiny boat. The Indians go out in these, the indigenous people go out in these little tiny boats, sort of hand trawling, just sort of putting their line. They seem to know where to go. That's the important thing. And they catch all these fish. And then those of us with expensive fishing poles and radar and so forth, and maybe come back with a couple or five a day. And you know, they've flown it in the boat. They've got, you know, so it's fun to see at the end of the day. Every little fishing village has a cleaning deck that anybody can use, and so you can see what the catch of the day was and so forth. But who knew? I just thought fish ran around in the ocean, but no, you know, some are deep, some are shallower, some are frisky. I mean, we would look off the back of the boat and the salmon would be jumping, you know, practicing their jumping or getting, it depends on who you talk to about why a salmon jumps, but they would be 2 feet from the boat and we couldn't catch them. I mean, give me a break. I mean, they'd be jumping all around the boat and we're putting our line down and, you know, changing bait, changing hooks. And I just want to make sure that we talk a little bit about the quality of the fish that was sent to me. I want to be real clear. So when you catch fish in Alaska and you want to send it home, it's a huge ordeal. If you're doing it yourself,
you said it, you mean you have to drink stiff drinks.
You got to have some stiff drinks. The paperwork, how you have to wrap it, how you have to send it, who can send it, who can't, who has a license, who doesn't. It is ridiculous. Anyway, I won't tell you how, but we did get our fish back to Arizona, and it was well frozen and so forth. And so I want to say that the fish that we got from you all is some of the best fish I've ever had. Really, really good. Compares exactly to what we caught. It was came frozen, but once you thaw, which is really easy to thaw, 30 minutes and it's done. You don't have to put it in the refrigerator overnight and all that. It thaws beautifully in water in 30 minutes. Firm fish, tasty fish. Not a lot of smell, consistency. We had halibut, black cod, and salmon, and all three. I'm telling you, for the amount of money we spent on this stupid ass trip to Alaska, I could have bought you guys out. And I'm being honest with you. For the amount, for not ever seeing any services for, you know, 3 months, no nail salons, no shopping malls, no nothing.
You were cut off of shopping for a while.
Oh God, it was.
Oh my God, you can't do that to the diva.
When you're trolling the supermarkets for fingernail polish, you know it's bad. So anyway, I just want to make sure that I tell you that anything that we brought back or caught was equal to yours, was equal or better than ours. I'm sure you understand.
You're talking about the freshness of it being right caught.
Freshness. The taste, the firmness. Firmness is a big deal because sometimes fish can get mushy. And and the way it's prepared comes in like, I think, six ounce. There's all sorts of, if you go on their website, there's all sorts of ways that you can buy this. We had the sampler, halibut, black cod, salmon. which was good because I had all of that, and we have all of that in our freezer. But it's always beautifully freeze-wrapped. You know, if you've ever gutted a fish, oh, my God. I'm sure for the boys, that's just, like, fabulous. You know, you get your knife, you get the big knife out, and you do this. You got to hit the fish, make sure that, I mean, you know, none of that is enjoyable for me. So you just go on this website, their website, and you get beautiful fish. Really, just like it. I was going to say, just like it came from Alaska. It comes from Alaska, but it's just as good as what we caught and ate fresh in Alaska and what we continue to eat frozen in our own freezer. So,
wow,
really, you have a beautiful, beautiful product. Everybody should have some. The sampler was fabulous. I think it's $140. Well worth it. I don't know if you've been into a market lately. You sort of see this fish. I don't know. You go to the counter and it's laying there. I don't know. I don't trust that. So might be just fine. You don't have to do that. This just comes to your door, put it in the freezer, 30 minutes thaw, fix it however you like. We fixed it in many different ways because we like fish and so forth. And it's a winner. It's beautiful. Wow. I really can't recommend it any more than I
wish we could give Sina an award now.
We should.
You did. I mean,
it is so hard to get those silly ass fish on the hook. Then once you get the fish up on the boat, then they flop around.
I don't think Diva Linda's going fishing again.
No, no,
she'll that be was ordering it. From CinaC.com.
It is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, and who knew you have? I mean, with these fish, they're jumping all around us. These damn salmon are all over. They jump here, jump there. It's like they're waving at you, you know. And then
go nanny, nanny, nanny,
nanny. I just would have thought there they are. They're stupid fish. They'll get on the hook. Not so much. Wow.
So it's a lot of generational knowledge. We don't have the type of radar where you see the fish going by, but that's not as important because over time, the fishermen are marking the areas that they've personally caught at. And so the fishermen do have spots and it's guarded really tightly. Fishermen might tell other fishermen where they're fishing in a general term, maybe. But they really don't like to give too much detail because they have secret spots that they go to.
Oh, and wow. So if you could camo your boat, you would.
Oh, yeah. And people go to actually, you know, when we bought our salmon boat, we put our name on real big and proud, Cammie Lou, and it's named for our daughters. And we were just really proud. And then we later found out a lot of these boats put their names on a little bit smaller and they really are trying to kind of go a little bit incognito. It's very complicated, but there's radio groups and people that you tell where you're going and people that you don't. And it's very much about where you go. And that is the knowledge that's passed down. When we fish in Cordova for salmon, there's locals that have grown up fishing there and they could double your own catch. You know, like you're saying, when you get back in, you like see who's done what, and it's really incredible.
Wow.
If you just went out without knowledge, it would be very difficult.
But then also online is really a big endeavor. The fishing itself is an endeavor. It's a family operation. So we're looking at small local business, right? A family business, which we are just so beyond 100% trying to support in this world as, you know, the world begins these big conglomerates. I mean, it's like, it's really hard to find and we need to support, you know, as much as we can. The quality is always better. You may pay a little bit more, but you're actually taking care of your body when you're buying this kind of, you know, fresh, you know, freshly frozen and freezing it right as you catch it and then get it out to people. I think that is also, even for vegetables, I know a lot of chefs talk about that. They're like, if you need to get organic frozen vegetables or you're harvesting, freeze it because it freezes it as it's fresh. So it sounds like that's kind of part of your secret to success is freezing it soon.
Yeah. Concurrently, while Rich was going off and learning to be a fisherman, I actually was getting my master's degree in food science and I studied fishery food science because that's what I know. And so I was quantifying, studying omega-3s. I was also looking at freezing onboard handling techniques and freezing techniques, and doing sensory analysis. How does that affect the taste, texture, flavor, eating qualities? So that's what my master's degree is in. And so when Rich is fishing, I've been feeding him with, oh, do this and oh, do that, you know. So we got to the point where we felt like we truly have the best fish. We're doing all the things to catch the fish right, handle it properly. Like you're saying, freeze it. Everything that we do, we got to the point where we really have the best. We feel really confident now. How do we get it out to people? Mm-hmm. Just like we have a freezer full of fish, we're very spoiled. And it was really going back to, well, how do we do that really consistently? And it came down to freezing really well. We wrap in parchment paper. You probably noticed this. We wrap in the parchment prior to the vacuum seal, so the fish doesn't touch plastic, which I like.
I like that.
Is an extra oxygen barrier, and it just seems to hold it even longer and without the freezer burn or anything like that. It comes out really high quality. So when we set out to do this, that was our mission. So I just love hearing what you're saying, because it is exactly what we set out to do, which was to bring that really high quality, but to do it with consistency is really the key. It's really cool how well it stays frozen. We freeze it to last up to a full year. This time of year, you know, in the winter time, you can get our Copper River sockeye, and mm-hmm. it's been frozen at the peak of the season. You unwrap it now, and it's incredible how fresh tasting. I send it to my dad. My family has subscriptions, so I send it to them. And, you know, my dad, who's fished for his lifetime, you know, the first time he opened it up, he couldn't believe it. So that's one thing
that's really, awesome.
Really take seriously, is getting that quality perfect every time. We have 100% guarantee. If anybody had a problem, we'd refund it or replace it. But we just get good news calls. So I like that.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, that's because you're taking attention to detail and the quality. I noticed also that you've got smoked fish on there, and you've got gift packets too, and you've got your own like sauce stuff going on. You know, I know I'm not the fish person, right? But it looks good to me. and it'd be something I would send to a friend or, you know, family for the holidays, you know, for celebrations, or just as a, you know, hey, what a great business gift too, I think, for people to look at, you know, what they're gifting their customers. So, I mean, year round, it shouldn't just be the holidays. I'm all about gifting is year round, right, Diva Linda? I know you believe in that, because Diva Linda likes to shop year round.
And you know what's is sort of exciting, as you get a little older, and or you're buying for somebody older, they're looking for an experience that they haven't been able to get before. And anybody that likes fish, wants to know about fish, et cetera, a subscription would be unbelievable. I mean, I have a subscription for grapefruit and some other fruity things, but I just think that would make a great gift or a great thank you. And really, it's really affordable, actually, when you consider what you get and the ease of it. The ease is so wonderful. So one of these fillets feeds for us. It fed two people, and it was just enough. It was fabulous. I'll tell you what, the fish is rich tasting. It's firm. It's wonderful. You do not need 6 ounces per person. That would be overkill. That's what we used to do. We used to do, do a big fish or whatever. And unless you're having a lot of people over, that's really not necessary. And that's why this is so good. It just comes in portions that you can use. This is a great gift. It's a surprise gift. Who knew? You're getting, a shipment. I mean, how many people buy those steak things, you know, at holidays and send it to, you know, you're going to get a box of steaks. And the quality is never quite what you expect, but in the fish, how exciting to get a fish box. Oh my God.
Because who's going to go, not everyone can go to Alaska and fish. And right, and have that experience. And from the sound of it, who wants to? Yeah. Well, they probably do, but you know what I mean?
It's so expensive. I mean, it's a lovely once in a lifetime sort of dream vacation for many people, right? Yeah, not for this exactly. people, but for my husband, he loved it. He thought it was wonderful. We did shrimping and crabbing and all that until we found out that we're just not the type of people who can put a crab in a boiling water. We had to freeze it. We had to put it in the freezer so it went to sleep.
I found that a lot of our customers, like you, have a, not all, but a lot have a connection to Alaska. They might have gone up and gone sport fishing one time or every year, but that appreciation of, wow, this is like when I went that one time and had exactly. the fish of my life, but now I can get it to my door and it's kind of when I'm not going to Alaska, because that doesn't happen all the time. So it's really been fun to hear about people's experiences with Alaska and how our fish kind of brings that all back. We do see a lot of really fun gifts. We have a little section for a gift note, and it's really fun to see people, Dad, you couldn't make it to Alaska this year. Here's a little something, to you. Plus it's sharing that you're almost sharing a meal together, sharing an experience. So it's kind of, it is fun. And we do have a lot of, like you were saying, a lot of smoked products. I think that we catch halibut, black cod, and Copper River salmon, five species of salmon. Then we do smoked products. And we also do a lot of minimizing waste. So we're not wasting any fish. So we have a lot of products that are utilizing the whole fish. We have what we call chop is a term we kind of invented. It's the little bits and pieces. So like on our whitefish, we're cutting these beautiful portions, but if there's a little bit here, or a little bit there, we're not going to throw away that perfect meat. We put it into a 1 pound bag, and it's like a bag of little bits and pieces. And if you're going to do fish tacos or a recipe, it's already cut, deboned, and no skin. So it's ready for a soup or a recipe. On the Copper River salmon, we do this similar. We actually scrape the backbone with a spoon. So that there's not even a tiny bit of meat left, so we're not wasting, and that fish adds up, and it's wonderful meat. Same thing, we put that in a 1 pound bag as chop, and people can use that to make their own salmon patties. I also use it in soups. Okay. And then we smoke on abundance. So like you're saying, all the extra products, we catch many species of salmon. So when we have a species that, if coho is a great year, you'll see more smoked coho products on our website. If Copper River salmon was abundant, this year we have a lot of Copper River salmon that actually towards the end of the season, it just kept on coming. We had a good end of the season, so we were able to put up extra fish for smoking. So then we have smoke jars that are gorgeous. It's in a clear mason jar, and you can see the smoked salmon. Those make really nice gifts. We have a smoked salmon pouch, and then we do the spreads. So we're smoking the tips and tails and the small bits, and then we're putting them in a cream cheese spread. And our spreads have a following. They are really fantastic. And we do a cold smoked lox. So it is kind of incredible when you go on the website and realize how many products, and that's really is this concept of utilizing the whole fish.
That's awesome because of the sustainability part of it too. It's like it takes a lot of effort to get that one fish, as we all have heard today. So it takes time to do, but I love what you go on your website too. You've got all these recipes. Like I was saying, we're putting up the soy sauce and of the black cod, the soy sauce recipe up on Blend Radio and TV. Everyone, it's there. But if you go on cenac.com, you'll see all kinds of, you have a recipe book too. That people can get when they sign up, right?
Yeah, I love for people to jump over to the website and sign up for our email list, our VIP list. You get a downloadable cookbook with our family recipes. When we work for farmers markets and do a lot of in-person stuff, people always ask, how do you cook your fish? And they say, no, how do you cook your fish? growing up in a fishing family and with our background. So that's what our downloadable cookbook is really our, how we cook the fish. The black cod recipe that you mentioned is a really special family recipe for us. Like I said, my dad started black cod fishing when he kind of took over the boat. And then it was a real feather in his cap. He ended up selling some of his black cod catch to a really nice restaurant in Seward, Alaska. And they put it on the menu, and they put it on, black cod is also called sable fish. So they, it's same fish, two names. And they put it on as Alarita's sable fish. Alarita is the name of the boat. And they use this recipe. It's the soy sauce. It's so simple. It's just soy sauce, garlic, and ginger. And so he had it at that restaurant, and he came home and brought a copy of the menu with the name and the boat name on it. And he brought the recipe back because he asked them what, how they did it. And that's how we've eaten black cod. I'm eating black cod with my family 100% of the time. It's going to be that recipe. Really good like that. My sister comes over, I will make black cod with that recipe. That's our family's comfort food. And Rich and I served it at our wedding. So we had salmon and black cod. Rich had caught the salmon and my dad had caught the black cod at the time. And so we served it. We gave that recipe to the caterer and served it with that recipe. So it's just one of those. Yeah, it's a really special one. It's definitely all of our family and friends expect that from us.
I love it. Well, you know, so this is the Eat, Drink, and Be Merry show. Let's talk about dinner parties, and it'll be our closing conversation. And so you both know the fish real well. So if you're going to invite someone or somebody, a couple or whoever to dinner, anyone alive or passed on, it could be a rock star, it could be, you know, family, it could be anybody over for dinner, who would it be, and what are you cooking, and what are you serving to drink with it? And it's got to be, you know, one of the fish that you know, go and get the sable. I'm used to that being an antelope from when I lived in Africa. So I'm like, that's not a fish. Apparently it is. So the black cod. So let's start with you, Diva Linda.
Well, actually, as it turns out, where the whole family is coming tomorrow from different parts of, one from California, one from Nevada. And so we're going to serve king salmon that my husband caught. And now that I know, I could have gotten it easier. But anyway, it's in our freezer.
It's you fine. Have the experience, and this is so great. I just think it's classic that you did all this. And then here I find out about C, and I'm like, well, Diva Linda can attest to just how hard it is to get this.
Well, so this is perfect. Especially the process of getting it back. I mean, it's very exciting to catch it and have it. But then if you want to take it home, you've got to do it fast, or you've got to freeze it and then
got it do all that work.
It's just as weird thing. So tomorrow is king salmon, rice, and my half of the family likes sweet wine and half like dry wine. So we will have a Prosecco to go with that. Yeah, it's not maybe traditional, but I think salmon tastes actually very good with the sparkling wine. And then on the other side of the table will be a Pinot. So it'll be a nice toast to the family being together after being separated for a while. And it's nice. All about Alaska and what Alaska can do. You got to get some wineries up there so that we could get some wine. But anyway, that's what we're doing.
Right on. Right. Well, there's got to be a winery in Alaska since there's wine in all 50 states. There's got to be at least one. I know there is, because there's wine.
There should be, but we didn't find it. But
well, anyway. You got to go back, get on that boat again.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, the growing season is so short in Alaska with the
ice wine.
maybe it is. I don't know. I have to look it up.
Do you know any wineries? Any wineries out there, Sina?
I don't know of any wineries in Alaska. Here in Washington, well, in Eastern Washington.
Oh, of course.
I think it's that narrow, you know, that when the sun shines, it shines almost 24 hours, but the window is so small. By the end of August, it's already getting really dark. So it's that tight season. I know of breweries. I think that's a lot more common up there because you growing that,
distilling and brewing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you beer might is want, everywhere.
You might yeah. want yeah. some whiskey for that cold. I'm yeah. just saying, you know, the closest I can get to how cold it gets up in Alaska is when staying in Madison, Wisconsin last year. And even when you stand in the sun didn't care about being warm. It just said, oh yeah, I'm a bright light and I'm cold. How did that happen? How is there no warmth from the sun? I don't understand to the sec, like, what is that? If you're standing in the sunshine, warm me up. No, I'm not going to do that to you today. So anyway, we're not doing that again, but it was fun. And I learned how to shovel snow and ice. And so we won't do that. But who's coming to your dinner table?
Oh, well, I'll start with the meal of, like I already mentioned, I love to cook black cod or sable fish with our family recipe when people come. I cook it for kids, especially if somebody is bringing kids and they like to warn me in secret, you know, don't be offended. My kid doesn't eat fish. I think almost every parent that we've had over has said that to me. And I, no problem. I make black cod with this recipe. It's really moist and silky. And if you don't look, if you pretend like you're not paying attention, kids will gobble it up. And as long as their parents don't mention that they don't like it,
exactly.
Don't remind them. Yeah. So that's a really fun one that I really enjoy for all guests, fish eaters or not, kids and adults, is fun to introduce them to black cod because a lot of times they haven't tried it. So that's kind of my go-to is to, is kind of a wow factor. Plus that recipe is, it turned out really gourmet, but it's actually incredibly easy and kind of foolproof because it has, you can't dry out black cod. It stays moist. Even if you overcook it, you can't really overcook it. So I feel like I have a little grace in the kitchen then too. As far as inviting, that's really, that's fun. I feel like I'm going to get the name wrong. Rich and I read a book about Theodore Roosevelt and I feel like I'm going to say it all wrong, but I believe he is the one that set aside all the national parks.
He started with the national monuments
yeah.
in 1906 or 1907. He started setting aside the national monuments and then later they became national parks.
Right. And so I think I would invite him because to me, that kind of forethought is what we need in fishing. We're really mm-hmm. into the sustainability, the whole fishing community, the family fishermen, generational fishermen like we are. It makes up a lot of the fishing community in Alaska and people are trying to have that forethought and sustainability is a really big issue and it's really critical. And I would love to have him so that we could really kind of talk about this, those big ideas. Like I just mm-hmm. think, what if he hadn't done that? What if he hadn't had the forethought ahead of time?
Well, it started with a dinner and a camping trip. And so that was with him and John Muir. He had done the monuments and everything. And of course, he was also a big hunter. Then he toned that back down and went, well, how much am I going to kill? So how having that balance. And so he went and hung out with John Muir in Yosemite. And the rest is history from that. It started with him camping and John Muir said, no, you're staying the night. You're going to sleep under the stars. You're not just going to go on a little hunting thing and come back. You've done your monuments, but that's not good enough. And Stephen Mather was in between there. And Stephen Mather, that's when they realized they needed a National Park Service beyond the national monuments. And because you can have national monuments and they're not National Park Service. Mm-hmm. They're both. It's a whole management thing, but and you don't care when you're in a park, what if it's a state park or a county park or a national park, but it really does matter in regards to saving them. So it's all that red tape does equate to something sustainable, but it was about having that meeting over a campfire, you know, having dinner, looking at the stars. And I think there's something about breaking bread or fish, breaking fins, you know, that you have to have that experience. Like you were talking about, Linda, that this is an experience. You know, during COVID, people couldn't just, you know, I mean, look what happened. We were fighting over toilet paper, for God's sakes. So, you know, you want to have these experiences as best you can. And sustainability is a huge deal. I know in fishing, what's happening to our water, you know, the intercoastal areas, the rivers for salmon, I know that's a big deal. And I think the more we can look at as a consumer, supporting smaller commercial fishing, the smaller ones like you guys, that really helps. And at the same time, we have to look at where the water is. And don't get me started. That's a whole other show. But it is true, because whatever happens to the water affects you as the fisherman and those companies. Mm-hmm. So it's all we're all connected. And whether or not I eat fish, that's an allergy. I can't help that. But we're all connected in some way to what's going on and what gets to our table. And if you can get it from boat to table, good for you. So go to CNAC.com and support those that really, that's important. The smaller, we've learned it from agriculture. The big monocrop, that doesn't work. I mean, Monsanto doesn't even have their name anymore. Uh-oh, did I bring them up? Sorry. So I think it's really cool what you're doing, and I know it's not like easy at all. So kudos to you. I think we should have a big blend awards show. We can hand it out to small business owners that are doing so much work like you. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. This is super fun. I really enjoy it.
I love it. And Diva Linda, I know I always tell people to follow you at allingoodtaste.info because she is all about good taste, but you've also got, is it the pnwtourist.com as well for your Pacific Northwest adventures? Mm-hmm. And of course, yes. blendradioandtv.com and nationalparktraveling.com. You can see Linda's articles and hear interviews there. So thank you all for joining us. It's been a true pleasure.
It's been wonderful. I'm so glad to meet you. You do such a fabulous job. You give all of your crew a big hug, especially the ones that have to go out early in the morning. I'm sure they go out early and then come back. It would have been fun if we would have run into one of them just by chance.
I know. I wish I knew this like beforehand, but you know.
I will tell you this funny story of how wonderful fishermen are. So as I said, we would dock at different places, and one of the places we docked had one of those fish cleaning places, and you get used to walking by and saying, hello, how are you? How did your fish catch go? And you could sort of see it's mounding on their boat, and it's coming out and they're cleaning. And one of the guys said, well, aren't you nice? Would you like some fish? Yeah. So he takes a hunk of fish. I think it was halibut. I'm pretty sure it was halibut. And we were not catching halibut, so this is exactly fun. Huge, huge. Is it here? Put your hands out. Okay. So then he puts it in my arms, and then he said, maybe you want a second one. Put a second one on top of it. And so we marched back to the boat, and that was part of our catch. It was really, I mean, who would do that? I can't even imagine how much money those hunks of fresh halibut cost. They're wonderful.
Wow. That's sweet. That's really sweet. And just, it's interesting that you guys both have talked about, you're either fishing for salmon or fishing for halibut. Like everything I've seen is you just go out and put your line over the pier, and what you get is what you get, or off the boat. That's what I always thought. I mean, I have obviously have no clue. But that's what I thought. I didn't know that there's radar things and lasers or whatever going on.
Special hook, special bait.
I just want goggles.
It's mixed up in your freezer with your with your other stuff. You got to be careful you're not pulling it out. Then it's got a thaw. It's really, here's my best advice. And it's in my one of my articles, which is first time out, go with the guide. Spend the money to go with a guide, see how they do it, spend a day, see how they do it, get them to talk a little bit about where they catch fish, because as you say, it's sort of a secret. If you ask somebody, they'll say, oh, you know, it's on the point, you know, well, which point? You know, you just go around the corner here, just, you know, you'll see it, and make sure you're in where it's deep, and you're going. So once you get out there, it's like going shopping without a shopping list. Did he say a peak or did he say a cove? What the hell did he say? Well, they're not going to tell you the GPS on it.
Same as going out on wildlife safaris. You know, mm-hmm. I grew up most of my life in South Africa and Kenya. And even now to this day in parks and national parks, if we see an animal, because, you know, here people do this stupid thing in parks where I'm going to go up to a bison and do a selfie like, hello, the bison doesn't care about that. Okay. So, and then we were just in the Smoky Mountains and there was elk with their babies, and people just clamored, got out of their cars, tried to take photos with their babies in front of the elk. And I'm like, dude, these are wild animals. Like, what would you like if someone came and did that to you at your house? You know, oh, look, they're having a barbecue. Let's go up and see if they'll give us some wine and some food, you know, some fish, you know. But anyway, so our trick is when you see an animal, if it's not some huge herd or something like that, you pull over, and people, and even on the wildlife drives, the National Wildlife Refuges. And so you'll see it, like we've been doing a lot with alligators lately. So I'm out there, and listen, you're getting bitten by mosquitoes and everything. The last thing you want is someone to screw up your shot. So you're sitting, not to kill, to film. And so you're sitting there, and people are not quiet and whatever. So we will pull over, and people are like, oh, what's there? You know, here they come with the big, big lenses on all the fancy gear. And so all we do is we pull out the big brochure of the park, or the atlas, which barely, I still have them. I have three atlases in the car, but you pull out the atlas like you're just dumb and lost. And, you know, they look at us. They're like two broads in the car. They're dumb, you know, drive around us. And meantime, they'll be like a lion or an alligator, depending on what country we're in. And we'll go, nya, 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 nya. So when people will go, oh, we saw this and we saw that, and I'll be all like, well, we saw a whole lot more, but we kind of covered it up with an atlas. We're the same way. But, you know, you can't give all your secrets, and you get to know where, if you go to a park often, you get to know where, what bird lives where, what animal comes through at what time, and get your atlas out. All right. Well, ladies, thank you so much. Everyone, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. We air daily at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time, except for holidays, because at that point, we should all be out having fun with our friends and family. So take care, everybody, and happy holidays.